Lights. How are you doing? My name's Jonathan. Rocking with some Arctic Monkeys tonight there, Matt.
I love this band so much.
I agree. But I like their... I know this has such a trendy, stupid, indie hop thing to say, but I like their earlier stuff better. They kind of lost me a little bit with the, like... I saw them in concert early on, and they were amazing. They just blew me away. It was like if you took Blur and gave them meth and just made them play nothing but Song 2 and Chinese Bombs over and over and over. They were great. And then the last time I saw him, he was like, he had a comb and he kept like running it through his hair. And he was doing like an Elvis impersonation
on
stage.
They did that album that was like the space loungy kind of thing.
Yes.
I forget the title of that album.
We're all like their hits were off of. And yeah. Right. You're listening to Esoteric Music Talk with Jonathan Weir and Matt Butler. How you doing, everybody?
we do have
music news coming up. Matt is going to be doing that in just a minute. But before we get to that, we should actually probably talk about some actual news on our news talk station. First story from Seattle is this headline from MyNorthwest.com. Seattle school shifts to virtual after student contracts measles. I don't know what's so hard about getting your kids vaccinated other than, you know, oh, it leaves a little scar on them. Yeah, you know what? That's true. A little imminent death is worth the risk so that they don't have a little scar on their arm sometimes.
We brought this up on Cairo Middays with Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill not too long ago, but I think there's just a growing thing where you're going to see vaccination rates across the board go down because of the skepticism and the propaganda regarding the COVID-19 vaccine. So I think there's going to be more vax skepticism in general going forward.
I think actually it's that, but I also think that the problem is that vaccines are going to be the victims of their own success. Where we don't see measles that much anymore. You know why? Because everybody vaccinated. That's why you don't see it as much anymore. Because it works. Because the vaccines work. In 1964, they came out with a measles vaccine that everybody was clamoring for. They would line up around the block just like they did the polio vaccine 13 years before that. But it doesn't matter. Because it's been eradicated, so my kids don't need to get it, because I don't know anybody who's gotten measles. Anyway, the school is shifting to virtual learning, and I'm just going to make this a little bit of a brighter topic by going in this direction with it. This is the perfect time of year for this to happen. Because, you remember what school was like in late May, early June? It was awesome. More or less, school was just you sitting there, the teacher maybe teaching for half a day, and then wheeling in a VCR, or if you're younger, a DVD player. I don't know what they do now. Probably just a computer, I guess.
They just broadcast their iPad to the big screen.
Yeah. Right. Just put the projector up there. And you would watch movies. The teacher would put on a movie and then leave the room and go talk with the other teachers. It was great. It was fantastic. That was the best day of school. Actually, personally, the best day of school ever that I ever had as a youngster was a movie day where the teacher went out and got a copy of The Little Mermaid and played it for the class. But here's the thing, Matt Butler and everybody else who's listening, it was not the Disney version of The Little Mermaid. It was some weird foreign version of The Little Mermaid where The Little Mermaid was not wearing them seashells.
Ah.
She
was the European
topless
version.
Yes, it was. And then sometimes she would swim and you could see the hair coming out of her pits. It was fantastic.
Educational.
It was. And the teacher left the room, so we were all just sitting there watching this topless mermaid movie. Oh, it was so good. It was so fantastic. It's look, I'm not judging anything, like, you know, orientation is a spectrum. I'm willing to admit that. But at a very young age, I realized, oh, I like boobs. Oh, man. Oh, man, do I like boobs. This is awesome. It was at a Catholic school, too, by the way.
Oh, lovely.
It was at a parochial school. What was, besides that, besides movie day, what was the best day at school? I think the last day of school needs to go up there, where it's just like, there's this energy about it. It's just different. Maybe it's a half day, but it's hot outside too, and you can't wait to get out. And you know, as soon as your frame leaves the building, you're free for 3 months.
Or the day before the break for Christmas, because you know you're going to get a long break.
Oh,
that's a good day too.
That is a good day, and you're going home. You know, Christmas is going to happen. My friend James, his birthday is in the middle of summer, and he always hated that, except for he said, like, whenever school was out, he looked forward to it like you would look forward to Christmas, because you're like, ah, my birthday's coming up too. Oh my God, this means so much more to me. Parachute day, that was fun. Like, when, I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about. I don't know if everybody had this experience, but when I was young, for PEE, they would just sometimes bring in a gigantic parachute, and you would, like, the kids would get in a circle, and we'd throw stuff into the parachute and jostle it up and down. That's just me.
I've never heard of this in my entire life.
No idea what I'm talking about. Okay, fine. The trickiest part about it was prying the dead parachuter out of it, and then using it to bounce.
See, if you'd asked me, I would have thought parachute day was the day the dope got smuggled into the jails.
Wow. I mean, I did go to a parochial school. I'm sure there's a lot of that as you got older, but not so much. All right. Next story. Next local story that we're going to talk about is this. Washington State is set to make a lot more money from the capital gains tax. Washington is going to collect up to and possibly more than $849 million in its first year of capital gains tax collection, instead of the measly, paltry $248 million that was projected before. And this is actually really good, because talking about schools, this is going to largely go to K through 12 schools, early childhood education, and building and repairing schools. The Education Legacy Trust account gets the first $500 million, and any excess goes to the state's construction budget. The state has collected $601 million as of May 9th. That's the last time we got numbers on this. However, the 2,500 taxpayers who filed for extensions submit their returns. After they submit their returns, the numbers will change and potentially go up. So you don't know what capital gains tax is. That's just basically, it's tax on anything you get from stocks, real estate.
So if you have something, value increases, you're taxed on the part of the value increase of the asset.
Exactly. And it's not that much. It's a 7% tax, which is crazy, because I actually did the math on this. There were 3,700 tax filers at 7% tax, which means that there was $12 billion in capital gains in the state of Washington in 1 year, in what some people might say is a recession. That's insane to me that much money was made just off of capital gains. And I have to say, guys, this is what happens when you start taxing people who have money. You have more money to put to things like schools. Instead of using regressive taxing like gas and sales tax and all the other crazy, stupid taxes we have in the state, which are a burden on poor people, this is what happens when you tax rich people. You make so much more money, and they don't even really notice it. They'll complain about it. They'll threaten to move to somewhere with probably even higher capital gains tax. But it's totally worth it. Because look at how much more money we're going to have for education. It's awesome. Maybe we could start spreading this out even more. I'm not saying we should take any money away from education, but maybe this could mean we could lower the cost of gas in the state. I know that means nothing to a public transit user like Matt Butler, but when I'm in Seattle and I see the price of gas, I go, couldn't they just put like a couple fingers up there? Like, not like as an FU so much as like, I will pay you a finger instead of what you're charging $6 for a gallon of gas. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. Moving on. I got this email from a listener, and I wanted to share it with you guys because he has a lot to say, and I think he's worth hearing out. And it's about Memorial Day. It's from a veteran named Glenn, and I had not actually ever heard this perspective, but I'm kind of glad that he's sharing it, just because I'm always glad when people share their point of view, especially when they don't have the most popular take on things. But Glenn says, I am writing to you to talk about Memorial Day. I'm a veteran. My best friend was killed in Iraq in 2007, and I have to say that I get so sick and tired of the way that people treat the Memorial Day holiday. And I'm not talking about people grilling and going to baseball games. I'm talking about the sanctimonious people who will get on the radio or TV and say, don't forget the reason for the holiday. As a veteran, the reason for the holiday is simple. It's so that my friend's family can have a day off from the pain and grief and maybe forget their troubles by relaxing on their porch with a beer or going to the beach. I'm still friends with his brother. He's talking about, again, his best friend who died in Iraq. And on Memorial Day, without fail, he gets messages on Facebook or Twitter or any social media from relatives and other friends saying, hey, just letting you know I'm thinking about Tim today. He told me once, yeah, that's nice. I think about him every second of the day, but glad you set some federally mandated time aside to put him in your thoughts. We don't do this on any other holiday, he says. We don't read the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July. We don't thank a local union leader on Labor Day. Hell, most people don't even go to church on Christmas or Easter. So why this? I know that's not a popular sentiment, which is why I thought it would be good for your unpopular opinion segment, which we've done occasionally. It's not been the biggest thing. Anyway, he says, just my two cents.
The unpopular opinion segment maybe is not the most popular.
That is very true. It is. It's not exactly taking off like I hoped it would, but Glenn likes it. He says, oh, and also, please stop thanking me for my service. I didn't do it for you. That's Glenn. I don't know where to go with this. I just wanted to share it. I agree and disagree with Glenn on this. I do feel like it is a little bit sanctimonious to tell people how they should spend their time, how they should celebrate holidays. I find that to be sanctimonious with Memorial Day, and I also don't like it at Christmas. Like, oh, remember the reason for the season. Well, the reason for the season is Christians wanted to co-opt Saturnalia, and then they put the, you know, birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ as the reason for the season. That was it. It was co-opting a pagan ritual, which also is the reason we have Easter. Why there's bunnies at Easter, which have nothing to do with Jesus, because, again, co-opting pagan ceremonies. But anyway, I do think, though, that people who celebrate, for lack of a better word, Memorial Day by remembering the fallen soldiers are well within their rights to do that. And again, Glenn, I would just say this. I think it comes off as equally sanctimonious when you say, hey, this day is only supposed to be for grilling and baseball. Don't try to remember dead soldiers in it. Maybe don't send messages to their relatives or friends saying, I'm thinking of your dead friend or spouse or brother. Maybe you don't need to remind them of it. Make a donation to a veterans charity instead. I mean, my brother died of a brain aneurysm back in 2001. September is Aneurysm Awareness Month. It would be weird to me if people started texting me like, hey, I heard it's Aneurysm Awareness Month. Just wanted to tell you, thinking about Dennis. That'd be weird. As far as like why Memorial Day even exists, it's not so that we could have grilling and, you know, mattress sales and things like that. The history of Memorial Day is actually after the Civil War. In South Carolina, there were a lot of Union soldiers who fought with black troops who were buried in a mass grave. And the townsfolk decided in 1865 to dig them up and bury them in individual graves, which is amazing. It's actually a fantastic thing that they did to give them their due worth. And that is how Memorial Day really got started, according to a professor at Yale. I don't know this offhand. I'm just looking this up on Wikipedia. So I guess I would say this. Look, celebrate however you want. If you want to grill and go to a baseball game or watch the Indy 500 or whatever is going on Memorial Day, that's fine. And if you want to spend it going to a gravesite and putting a wreath down and putting some flowers down, that's fine too. It's a day off. Do whatever you want with it. I really don't have much more to say than that. I think that it's silly to try to make people celebrate something the way that you prefer to be celebrated. That's just me. We are going to be talking about music coming up because I'm changing topics as quickly as I can right here to get out of a tough segment. Matt, what are we going to be talking about in the music news segment?
Oh, goodness. We've got John Mellencamp telling off some fans. We've got the German police going after Roger Waters and a story about the late Tina Turner all coming up.
Oh, man. So you obviously were on air, but not with me during this week when Tina Turner passed. How did you feel about that, Matt?
Very sad, but also reflected on a beautiful career. And the story of her life was so great, how she triumphed over some very bad circumstances and became an icon, found somebody who loved her so much and lived out the rest of her life very richly. So it's an inspiring story.
Did you know that the guy that she was married to, not obviously not Ike, who was the guy's name, Eric Brahms?
Sure of her husband's name.
Yeah, but a wonderful guy. He, when she was having kidney failure, gave her a kidney.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like 30 years younger than her. He's significantly younger than her and shortened his life just to extend hers a little bit longer. That is a beautiful story, and she really did find the reverse of Ike.
Indeed,
she
did.
When she married that guy. Yeah. I also was very sad at her passing. We talked about it on the show. You know, I'm glad that she's found some peace, and I'm glad that she found that somebody who loved her, because it was a triumphant life in the end, but a very, very tough life as well, which I guess you can't have the triumph without the toughness. All right, so we got music news and much more coming up on Cairo Nights. guys, how you guys doing? My name is Jonathan Ware. Happy to be joining you on a Friday. Got Matt Butler back in the booth. How you doing, Matt?
Good as always.
All right, so we're going to do music news with you, Matt, and I just want to warn you, I do have an intro for this.
Awesome.
So it's going to sound really, really cool, but I hope it doesn't throw you. Here we go. It's time for music news with Matt Butler.
Music.
News, 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 news.
I suppose this is where I start talking.
Yes.
I was waiting for the drop. It's very EDM.
It was right there. Yeah.
Ha. All right. Well, shall we get started with our first story about a man formerly called Johnny Cougar?
Johnny Cougar. Is that his real name?
No, I think that's the pop name. That's how they wanted to market him, I believe.
I'm going to look this up while you
is that on his birth certificate?
Here. I gotta look this up.
Anyways, the guy we know now is John Mellencamp. He spent decades perfecting a reputation as one of classic rock's most uncompromising figures. And he displayed a little bit of cantankerousness during a May 25th Cleveland show, warning attendees he would cut that performance short if they didn't shut the bleep up. The rocker made a stop at the Playhouse Square venue as part of his live and in-person tour. So before he hits the stage, he posts a sign. He says, you know, this show respects theater etiquette. And following the 30-minute montage that opened the show, Mellencamp said early on that he doesn't like people screaming from the audience. But that didn't stop one ticket holder. She yelled at him to play the bleeping music after he reportedly appeared to criticize the United States.
Wait, are you? Oh, okay, so he was going on some rant about the United States.
Well,
and
you know, Mellencamp is kind
for.
Of a political guy. Sing. He's got some very specific causes, especially on the new album.
I think it does throw people about John Cougar Mellencamp to find out that he is like deeply passionate about political things, and not in the way that a lot of people would think. He's very progressive and liberal, but all of his songs are about living in a small town. So it's
yeah, but
it's
he's
a little bit off.
Got that sort of blue collar, working class, union kind of working man's vibe, kind of like Springsteen. So his politics never surprised me.
I agree with you. He's very blue collar. How blue collar used to be, where it used to be like, hey, you know, F the man. And the rich are trying to screw us. Let's not let that happen. And now a lot of unfortunate blue-collar attitude is, hey, the rich people know what they're doing.
The people who got us into this mess, let's pay fealty to them. That's an idea.
Yes, let's give them more. I hate to say my dad was right about anything, but he is union through and through, and he would lose his mind talking about, I remember some of my earliest memories were him ranting about the upper class versus the middle class back in the 80s, and how the executive class was putting the screws to us, and I'll never be a yard master because he worked at the railroad. I'll never be one of them, and like all this stuff. And I was like, okay, Dad, we get it. You don't have ambition. But I realized later, oh, no, he was actually making a political point. Anyway.
So she yells at him. She's mad that he's making political points. And he goes, yeah. Listen, you guys, if you guys don't shut up, I'm just going to leave. He says, if you wanted to play in a drunken environment, I'd play outside or an arena show. Like, this is supposed to be kind of an intimate thing, and this was the mid-show acoustic portion. So it was really kind of contradictory to the mood of the music.
Well, that's something that, look, I'll say this as somebody who's played in bands. It doesn't matter how small you are or how big you are. As soon as you pull out the acoustic guitar and say, okay, we're going to do a little bit something different here. We're going to strip things down. People are like, oh, cool, I can talk. I can talk over this. This is going to be great. I went to see Love, the Beatles show in Vegas, and it was, for my entire family and me, it was $700 for all of the tickets. And the entire time, these idiots were talking behind me anytime there was a quiet part where they could start talking. And so I get his frustration with it, but I almost think it's like a natural thing with so many people where they're like, oh, well, I'm in a social environment. I should act socially and start talking to my friends about the show. No, you should shut up and enjoy the music. Anyway,
yeah,
what
I
else
don't
we
understand.
Got
like, why do people go to concerts if they want to hold their own conversations? If you're paying to go to a show where someone is performing, aren't you there to see them?
Ironically, you know where that never happens? Well, for the most part, it never happens at stand-up shows, where there's nothing but silence. It's nothing but just a dude talking up there. But for some reason, if it's a dude singing with an acoustic guitar, people are like, oh, so Rennie, guess what I did this weekend? Gary came out of the house. Just shut up. Shut up. Shut up. I paid to see the show. Shut up. I want to hear Bob Dylan, not you.
Ha, I like the Jack White thing. Leave your cell phones at the door.
Yeah, damn right.
Good
Dave
man.
Dave Chappelle as well. Yeah.
Roger Waters, no stranger to controversy. He kind of has some polarizing opinions on the Israel-Palestine conflict. And now he's being investigated by the cops in Germany. The former Pink Floyd frontman wore a Nazi-inspired costume during a recent Berlin performance, May 17th. And he wore an SS-style uniform during his performance of the song In the Flesh. It had a long leather jacket, gloves, and a seemingly Nazi-inspired red armband. It did feature a crossed hammer symbol, not a swastika. But the inflatable pig with the Star of David made its reappearance once again.
Yeah, okay, but boy. I know he's anti-Israel. If you're anti-Israel, does that make you anti-Semitic?
Well, the way Waters and a lot of the people who would side with him would parse it is that they're not so much anti-Israel as that they're pro-Palestinian, and Israel has a very conservative, dominated the Netanyahu government.
Yeah.
And so they view a lot of the protests through that lens.
Well, because I feel like that's how a lot of people have kind of gotten away with calling other people anti-Semites, is if you are against the policies of Israel, no matter what they are, which have very little most times to do with their religion, you are anti-Semite, you're anti-Jewish. And that's not necessarily the case. And also, the hammer thing, I mean, isn't that from the wall? Wasn't that a symbol a long time ago?
I can't tell a picture of the specific symbol. It's not close enough for me to look at the symbol. I mean, there's other fascist symbols besides the swastika, so I don't know what it resembles.
Well, the swastika isn't even naturally a fascist symbol.
It's history.
Symbol for peace.
Yeah. So in Berlin and in Germany writ large, that's a possible crime because it's if you're using symbolism that supports Nazis or is deemed capable of approving or glorifying that, then they can disrupt the public peace under their law, and they investigate. So,
they are very sensitive about that for probably good reason. But they are very when. I was over in Germany, and it was in the 90s. There was a kid in my class group who was walking around, thought it would be funny to start yelling Sieg Heil and start goose-stepping. And somebody literally grabbed him and threw him into a wall and said, "We don't do that here." And I was like, "You don't do that here anymore."
Yeah.
I used to kind of do it. Then something happened. I don't remember what it was. But they're incredibly... They know how pervasive that can be, though, and so they try to nip it in the bud as early and as soon as they possibly can, which is
that's called the Barney Fife strategy.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but yeah, it's nip it in the bud. But Kiss actually in Germany has to have their logo differently, because if you know the Kiss logo, the S's are kind of look like the not the Wehrmacht group, but the SS group.
Gestapo. There is some similarity in the font.
Yeah, and so they actually have to have the S's look like S's, which is ironic considering Gene Simmons lost family members in the Holocaust.
Yeah, that is ironic.
Yeah.
I really do think.
I think it's a little too ironic, honestly. It's like rain.
On your wedding day.
On your wedding day.
Which isn't really ironic, it's just weather.
I feel like we need to give Alanis Morissette a break on that, on the ironic thing. Like, she got it wrong, okay? But she was like 19 years old when she wrote the song. Did you have that good of a grasp of the English language when you're 19? No.
Well,
and then
yeah,
it was her biggest
hit,
so she has to sing
nerd.
It every night. Yeah, fair enough.
Everybody
told me that Alanis Morissette was wrong about what ironic means.
So that's how you learned.
It's the only reason I knew.
It's very educational.
Yeah, maybe, you know what she should do? She should claim that she got it wrong on purpose so that she could teach an entire generation what the word actually means.
A public service.
from Alanis Morissette.
Indeed.
Or maybe it just means something different in Canada. You ever think of that?
I don't know, eh?
She's from. By the way, yep. John Cougar Mellencamp's actual name is John Mellencamp. So there you go.
I thought so.
Yep.
I thought the Johnny Cougar thing was an attempt to make him a teen idol by his record label. Yeah.
All right. It is Cairo Nights. Next, we're going to talk about the weirdest advice that Dear Abby has ever given to anybody. She encouraged cousin loving. Yeah. Yeah, Dear Abby's getting weird, guys. And we need to talk about it next on Cairo Nights. It's me, John the Weir. How you doing, everybody? Thanks for listening. Happy Friday. You know, Matt Butler, you're a music aficionado, almost a historian, I would say, based
Thank
on your
much.
Knowledge of Gloria Jones that we displayed at the end of the hour, last hour. Are there any songs about cousin loving?
Ooh.
I don't ask you that because you're from Mississippi.
No. On a later Steely Dan album, there was a song called, I think it was Two Against Nature. There's a song called Cousin Dupree. It is hysterical.
Okay. Leave it to Steely Dan, who, by the way, I can't even tell you how they got their name, but it's from a William Burroughs album, or not album, a William Burroughs book called Naked Lunch, and it's disturbing how they got their name. But anyway, yeah, leave it to Steely Dan to come up with that. I think that maybe they could walk down the aisle to this. Somebody wrote to Dear Abby, and they said this, and they wrote in as the name Ashamed. Dear Abby, let me give you some music on this. I am a 57-year-old male. I have no children, and I was forced to move back in with my mother to start my life all over again. I divorced my wife because she was cheating. I have a cousin from Alabama who is 30 years old. Remember, this guy is 57. I love her dearly. She's my favorite cousin, and I've begun to have feelings for her. I think it may be my body's way of telling me it wants to procreate and leave a legacy, which is, this is an aside by me, Jonathan, how you doing? That's like not the most romantic way to describe your feelings. I believe my body wants me to procreate and leave a legacy. This is your ovum, and this is my... Okay, anyway. I think I feel guilty about these thoughts and feelings. In my heart, I believe they are shameful. These thoughts are something that I must take to my grave and never act upon. But the urge is growing stronger. Oh, need to play music again. The urge is growing. Actually, you know what? Actually, that's not the right music for this. Let me change that. The urge is growing stronger. And it's becoming a losing battle. Telling her or anyone else in my family my true feelings would be a terrible thing for me to do. Can you please help me rid myself of these feelings for her? I will take any advice into consideration. That's from Ashamed in Tennessee. Now, it's all well and good to make fun of that guy for having that problem and not being able to control himself, and obviously is a, in my head, probably a lech who has a 30-year-old cousin who would never reciprocate these feelings for a man 27 years older than her, but whatever. This is what Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, wrote back to this man. Dear Ashamed, in some, but not all states, marriage between cousins is legal. Tennessee and Alabama happen to be two of them. Your cousin may be 27 years younger, but at 30, she's a grown woman. Do you have any indication of whether your feelings are reciprocated? Sometimes the feelings we suppress only make them grow stronger. A way to resolve this would be to express them. If your cousin doesn't share your affection, bear in mind that all women are not cheaters, as your wife was, and start to build a new life while you look for a suitable companion in your community. All right. Do you think that was good advice, Matt Butler?
I don't know where to begin. I would just say run far away from this. No, there's no equivocation here. Just don't.
No, what? Why? It is perfectly okay to tell someone, hey, buddy, I know you have those feelings, but do not ever tell anybody that you feel that way, because they will definitely judge you harshly. Even if it is Alabama and Tennessee, they will still judge you harshly, and you will be an absolute pariah at every family get together. For the love of God. I don't understand why that was so hard, but Abby's like, well, you know, you could get married. You could. You could Giuliani it all over the place. That's fine, but you shouldn't. I'm not even...
There's a lot of things you can do that you should not.
That's a great point. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of
this
things.
This would fall under that category.
You could get a Tesla car, put a cement bag in the front seat, tie a Coke bottle to the steering wheel, put a brick on the accelerator, and just see where it can take you. It's a bad idea. You'll probably die, but you could do it. You could do it. You have the urge to do it? Well, you could do it. Doesn't mean you should. To quote Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, you need to spend more time thinking about whether you should and not whether you could.
Yes. Apt quote. We should play a little of that Steely Dan song, though.
You can, if you want to play it later, or you can take us out with it. I want to hear it. This is funky.
Well, I've kicked around a lot since high school. Worked a lot of no wagons. From keyboard man in a rock and ska band, the hall and boss including the big rigs. Now I've come back home to plan my next move from the comfort of my FA's couch. When I see my little cousin Janine walk in, well, all I could say was ouch.
Oh, my God. Why do I feel if I had been at a wedding DJ in Alabama, this would be the first dance song to way too many couples?
Of course, being Steely Dan, the guy ends up looking like a total fool. They're not promoting it.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's good. At least they went there. But still... So they didn't go the Dear Abby route and encourage this kind of thing. They're actually saying, oh, it's a bad idea. What the hell is going on?
It's catchy.
Yeah. Is that going to be the flip side of woke, of where, like, you can't judge anybody for anything? Like, because there are some people that I feel like you shouldn't judge it. It's not hurting you. You're not whatever. But I also feel like it's a bad idea to give somebody advice to pursue relationships that would be embarrassing for them.
Right. Some things should be judged.
Yes. Some things. I don't honestly even know if it's the cousin angle that bothers me as much as he's 27 years older than her and her cousin. It's that confluence of things.
Can they
and he's
add
living
one more
on his mother's couch.
Into the trifecta here?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's living on his mom's couch.
Well, yeah, there is that.
There you go.
This man has a bright future if you can overlook these things.
Congratulations, Link. That's the triforce of loserdom. You just nailed it.
Was not expecting a Zelda reference, but props to you.
Well, I felt like I had to make the guy feel better about who was humiliating him and making fun of him by nerding the bit up as best I could. All right, we got the Doom Scroll coming up. It's just a bunch of random dumb news stories that we're going to talk about. Like this. A guy sent nudes through AirDrop on his iPhone during an apartment application. The only question is, did he get the apartment? Did it help? Will it help you? We'll talk about it on Cairo Nights.